So good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome to the December edition of the ABCD GIS series. Also, Geography Colloquium is what these meetings are known as. Before I introduce our speaker, why don't we go around the room and just do quick introductions so we kind of know who's here today. I'm Jeff Blossom. I'm with the Center for Geographic Analysis. I'm the Service Project Manager with the Center. Why don't we start here?
My name is Philip, with CGA, and I'm working on the remote sensing, especially remote sensing. That's it.
Great.
Yes, I'm Aki. I'm a visiting scholar of Center for Geographic Analysis and from the University of Tokyo.
I'm Katsuya Nishara, and I'm in Kawasaki Sensei's lab, Kawasaki Teacher's lab, and I'm a master's student, first grade, and I'm studying in the modeling of hydropower dams.
Great.
My name is Kohei Okuda. I'm a master's student of University of Tokyo. I'm research about estimation of poverty area.
I'm the executive director of the Center for Geographic Analysis here. Actually, my background training is water system modeling from my previous life, long ago. So it's very close to me when a topic comes with geospatial technology and then related to hydro systems. Welcome all of you from
our student brought a souvenir from Japan, so why don't we share?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll just
open
and
share.
Thanks.
Wow. Yes, and thank you, Professor Kawasaki, for bringing your students here, and lots of diversity that they're studying, so it's good to you know, sounds like looking at both environmental and social issues. And you know, that's very much what we help people with here at Harvard, is any kind of research that uses geographic analysis is kind of what we do. So we are delighted to have with us today Abdul Muiz. He's a PhD student with University of Tokyo, so yet another student of Aki's here. Department of Civil Engineering, supported by the Japanese Ministry of Education, Culture, Sports, Science, and Technology. His main research interest is the provision of decision support to hydropower planners using GIS. He is particularly interested in the development of tool sets that integrate advanced distributed hydrological models with GIS to support climate-informed planning strategies for locating new hydropower projects, as well as improved real-time operations on existing projects. And so with that, I will turn it over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me today, and thank you all for joining today. So the topic of today's talk is integrating geospatial technologies with advanced hydrological models for robust energy planning. And in the background, you can see a picture of a dam. So this is the Shimokubo Dam from Japan. And so ironically, I mean, I've been interested in dams since a long time, but I have seen more dams in Japan than back in Pakistan, which is where I come from. So in Pakistan, I've only seen one dam, but in the last 4 years in Japan, I've seen, I think, up to 5 or 6 dams, or maybe even more than that. So I think in Japan, it's really, really relatively easier to get access to visit these kind of structures. So before moving further, I would like to discuss a little bit about my research motivation. So as you know, I'm interested in energy planning. And back in my undergrad, in the third year of my undergrad, I did an internship at the government's office who are responsible for planning these kind of hydropower projects and providing electricity to the general public. And ironically, even during that internship, we used to experience power shortages for like up to 5 or 6 hours every day. So the situation was really terrible back then. And even if you meet anyone from Pakistan, even now, and you ask them that what is the situation about electric power there, they would say that maybe in the cities it would be like 1 or 2 hours every day we don't have any power, and in the villages it's even worse, like 10 or 20 hours every day they don't have electricity. So this is sort of the bigger problem I was targeting. And this is a chart which shows the increase in the supply and demand over the years. So you can clearly see that the deficit in the electric power has been increasing over the years, and this data is up to 2011. And this is mainly probably because of population increase, but the infrastructure hasn't been able to keep up with the population increase. And then we also had the Sustainable Development Goals in 2015, and goal number 7 is about provision of affordable and clean energy. So this is really about scaling the renewable energy across the globe and providing access to these kind of resources remotely. And when I mean, when you look at this goal, the first thing that comes to mind is solar energy or wind energy, because those are really useful for providing to people in remote areas. But actually, renewable is a lot more like bigger than that. So if you look at these estimates from end of 2018, so this is the share of non-renewable electricity in the global energy market, and this is the share of renewable energy, so which is 26.2%. And out of this share, 15.8% is hydropower. So you can see that hydropower is clearly still the dominant renewable electricity provider in this renewable electricity mix. And these figures are from the most recent report by the International Hydropower Association. So this is the fastest growing countries by new installed capacity in 2018. And obviously, China has a lot of projects and they're still investing a lot in these projects. So they installed 8.54 gigawatts in 2018. And then we have Brazil. And I was really surprised to see the name of Pakistan there in this report from 2019. So the government has now installed 2.49 gigawatts in the year 2018. And clearly, when I talk back home to my friends and family, we can see the effect that we don't really have those power shortages as much as we did in the past. So yeah, we can see that this the research and the need is there for this kind of development. So and then the problem domain that my research usually covers is of the alpine watersheds. So if you're not familiar, so if we have this kind of a mountain, and then high up in the mountain we have some snowfall, and the snow is accumulated, and then we have a series of dams in these mountain areas, so they get their inflow from the snow melt, and they divert this water stored in the dams to powerhouses so that they can generate electricity. And then some of the water is released downstream for other purposes, such as environmental flows or for irrigation, tourism, and so on. And because of the limited capacity of these dams, they're not able to store all of the water, so some of it gets spilled out. And the ultimate goal is to provide for the needs of this society, for example, provide electric supply or protect them from flooding and so on. So my interests are these two. So identification of new hydropower projects, and the operation of existing projects. So I believe by dealing with these two challenges, we can somehow contribute to the Sustainable Development Goal number 7 and increase the share of renewables in the global energy mix. And if you're not familiar with hydropower, so if you want to calculate hydropower of a single hydropower project, that this is the very simple, seemingly very simple equation. So we have three parameters which are more or less constant, but the two main variables are the discharge in the river, amount of water that flows into these dams, and the gross head, which is the difference in the elevation between these two powerhouses and the water level in the dam. So this determines how much power output these dams have. So today's talk will cover two main topics: the development of a robust pre-feasibility hydropower site selection platform targeting the goal number one, and the development of a real-time snow hydrology prediction system for optimizing hydropower dam operations. So on with the first topic. So if you, maybe some of you are not familiar with hydrological modeling, so this is a very simple table which shows how can we get the river discharge. So I mentioned there are two variables, river discharge and the head. So how do we get the river discharge? So this is a table which shows different sources. So obviously the first one, the simplest way is that we just observe the river discharge or the water levels, and then using a curve like this between discharge and head, we can get the observation of discharge. And this is a very not data intensive, there's no computing cost and there's no process description. And then we have simulation based methods such as lumped hydrological models. So this is your typical watershed, and then if you know the location of the point where you need the discharge, then using this set of usually empirical equations with low computing cost and low data intensive, we can get the discharge, simulate the discharge at this point. But still the main problem is that you need to know the point where you need the discharge. And then we have the modern hydrological models, which are called distributed hydrological models. So these discretize the river basin into a number of grids. And because of this discretization, it's possible to have model each of these grids physically. And but the main problem is that the computing cost becomes really, really high because now it's discretized. And these methods are also very data intensive, so you need a really high quality inputs for each of these grids. And for hydropower project identification, we need to consider the basin topography and the basin hydrology, and we have different challenges for both these two. I mean, this is not really a challenge anymore thanks to remote sensing and global digital elevation models, so we can get an assessment of the basin topography from those. But the basin hydrology is still a challenge. So we need, we generally have a very coarse network of discharge observations high up in the mountains. And the basin hydrological models don't really have very good snow physics at this moment, or in the past at least. So this is like a big challenge in the basic modeling the basin hydrology. And by using, by considering both these aspects, and by using hydrological modeling and the geographic information systems, we can get a measure of a hydropower potential. So the more specific challenges are the weight. So a lot of previous studies have actually done this. They have had some assessment of hydropower potential using global maps. But there are still some challenges, like the vague distinction between different kinds of hydropower schemes without a resolution of conflicts among them. So I'm going to talk more about these different kinds of schemes in the next slide. And then integrating the gaps between this GIS part and the hydrological modeling part from the perspective of site selection of these new projects. And as I show in the first figure, there are a lot of dam. There can be a lot of dam in the mountains, so we need to consider cascaded reservoirs, which means that the cascade of reservoirs and their impacts on each other. And then finally, there are some papers which actually do use hydrological modeling with geographic information systems, but as I mentioned, those are based on lumped hydrological models with very simple snow physics. So that, yeah, for lumped hydrological models, you need to know the location where you need the discharge. So if you already know the location, so you're not really doing any site selection for new projects. So basically, you assume a location, and then you do, you do an assessment of hydropower potential, but not site selection itself. So yeah, the question is, how can we optimally locate sites in the basin so that hydropower potential at basin scale is maximized? And the goal is development of a robust pre-feasibility hydropower site selection platform. So so generally, very, very generally speaking, there are three kinds of hydropower schemes that we are considering in this study. The first one is called the waterway type. So if you have a river segment here, So it can so the hydropower scheme, which is the water leak type, has three main components: the diversion site, which diverts water from here on the river through a waterway to a powerhouse, and this is where the electricity is generated. So the main the most important thing is the elevation difference between these two points, and it determines how much electricity we generate. And then the second one is the dam type. So if you don't have a big elevation difference, you can store a lot of water in the reservoir and create that elevation difference with a powerhouse located on the dams. And the third is a combination of these two, so the waterway dam type. So we combine the reservoir, and we also take advantage of the topography, and yeah, we have a powerhouse somewhere downstream. So these are the three main hydropower schemes that we are considering. And the previous studies, as I mentioned, don't really make a distinction between these different kinds. And so this research has three main objectives: to develop a basic site selection platform for these three kinds of hydropower dams, and integrate hydrological modeling with these distributed hydrological model and cascaded reservoir models, and then evaluate these on basin scale and compare it with some actual projects and evaluate their effectiveness. And for this study, we're using the target watershed located at the foothills of Himalayas in Pakistan. So it's not such a big river basin, but we have some data here. So we have some rainfall and meteorological and the discharge observations here. And we have in the upstream areas, and we have some meteorological and discharge observations in the downstream areas. So as you can see, discharge observations are really, really sparse. So we have only one observation point here and one observation point here. So yeah, one way is, of course, we can just assume this is the discharge and we calculate the head and we get the hydropower potential, but then we're not really doing any site selection, right? So, and yeah, the impact of snow is quite evident. If you look at the average discharge over a year, so you can see that it correlates very well with the average temperature. So as soon as the temperatures increase, you get a lot of discharge, which means it's coming from snow up in the mountains. And a little bit about the how the algorithm that we're designing really works. So for the first kind, what we need to do is we need to select the optimal location of this waterway. So we designed this system using ArcPy, and yeah, just for your reference again, this is the kind we are talking about right now. So if this is a digital elevation model, and then this is the river network in that digital elevation, using that digital elevation model. So firstly, we consider only one stream segment, and this is the flow directions. So yeah, the algorithm begins basically by assuming a certain location of a powerhouse, which is considered as a search point, and then developing the annular search zone around it, and then finding out other discretized points on this stream segment. So obviously the diversion points should always be upstream. So these green ones are possible, considered as possible diversion points. And then in order to save some computation time, we screen out some of the other undesirable waterway routes based on the head and the slope and the permissible waterway length and the minimum catchment area upstream of these. And by using a multi-criteria decision-making technique called PROMETHE, or Preference Ranking Organization Method for Enrichment Evaluations. So we want to maximize the gross head, and we want to maximize the catchment area, because at this moment we're not really considering the river discharge. So the catchment area is used as a proxy for river discharge in the first basic algorithm. And to save the cost, we want to minimize the length of this waterway. So by assuming this as the powerhouse, we have effectively optimized the location of the waterway within this region. And if we do this for all of the assumed locations of the, for all the assumed locations of powerhouses, we will get something like this. So this is where it's quite different from previous studies, because these are all conflicting with each other. If we make one, it's going to affect the other one upstream. And if we make another one, it's going to affect the previous one. So then we have another set of tests called cutoff tests. So these determine what is the effect of one scheme on the other one. And then we do another set of optimization using the same multi-criteria decision-making method to finally come up with the most optimal solution of the waterway. And we can do the same for other streams. community as well. So by using this method, we were able to identify 36 favorable sites in this river basin, which can go have a head of under 100 meters, over 200 meters, and they have a hydropower potential of up to over like 25 megawatts. So this was for the first kind of the watery type hydropower. And for if we want to make a dam, then we have to consider the reservoir area and the depending upon the dam height. And we can easily do this using a digital elevation model. So why we want to do this is to see, of course, we want to have a larger storage capacity for a larger hydropower production. But at the same time, if we have a larger reservoir area, then a lot of the population here would be displaced. So we don't really want that. So we again identified these top ranking dam sites by using the same multi-criteria decision making method to see which of the dam height and the dam location combination works best for us. And then we were able to identify five very favorable sites using this algorithm. So this is just a visual of these different sites. You can see the water depth, dam height. And then for the third type, we combined both these two algorithms, and this is still a prototype. It says here prototype because we just assumed the location of the powerhouse in order to compare it with some other previous reports from a consultancy called Mott McDonald back in 2005. So they did an on-site analysis and in very detail. So we wanted to compare our site selection algorithm with these kind of more practical observations. So this has never been done before in this kind of hydropower analysis. So they identified a lot of different sites, and they found that the most optimal, the best site for them was this dam site number 3. But our algorithm shows that the best site is located somewhere here, and the reason is quite simple. They initially, in their initial assessment, they found that this is the best site in terms of hydropower production, but because of some geological faults in this area, they had to change the site to their second preference, which is located here. So this is a caveat of this tool that we only consider hydropower based on the topography and hydrology, but we don't really consider the geological aspects. So these kind of things also need to be considered in order to get a more realistic estimate. Nonetheless, yeah, it works for the hydrology and the topographical analysis. And then we integrate the water resources into this kind of algorithm. So we integrated a distributed hydrological model, as I explained earlier in my presentation, and a cascaded reservoir optimization model into this algorithm, and we applied it to the basin scale assessment of this Kunhar River Basin. So the hydrological model that we're using is called the Water and Energy Budget-Based Distributed Hydrological Model with Improved Snow Physics, or in short, WEBDHMS. So I'll maybe explain a little bit more about it in the next few slides, but for now, just what's important is that by using this model, we can simulate the discharge pretty well in this upstream area at a model resolution of 300 meters. And then we also ran this model for 21 years, and we found that the results don't really change a lot. So in hydrology, we use these two error indicators called the Nash coefficient and the percentage bias. So Nash coefficient closer to 1 is better, and the percentage bias closer to 0 is better. So yeah, you can see this is a pretty good model for this simulation. And so the main point of using this kind of hydrological model is that we can get a distributed representation of the distributed solution to the discharge throughout the river basin. So this range shows the discharge versus the percentage exceedance in days over the whole year for discharge. And you can see that there is quite a big difference in each sub-basin as we go downstream. And as we go downstream, the discharge increases. So yeah, this is the main point of this study. And for hydropower, they generally use these 30% percentage exceedance discharge, or the 70% exceedance discharge, or 95% to get a measure of the reliability for a certain discharge value. So, yeah, Yeah, so the reliability and the value of discharge is important, and this varies in space. So this is what our we want to include in our algorithm. So these are the results before integration, considering only the topography, and this is the result after integration, considering both topography and hydrology. So there are considerable differences. So for example, these sites, which are located at the higher elevation regions, are not identified anymore, and instead these are redistributed to some other sites downstream. So this is because these sites were favorable initially just considering topography, but they don't really have a lot of water resources in these areas. So actually this is not really a good candidate for hydropower development. So this is what our algorithm screens out by, yeah. So, okay, and this is the based on some numbers, the same result. So yeah, so before the integration, the result is shown in blue color, and after integration, it's shown in black color. So the total number of sites was reduced from 36 to 26, but the hydropower potential is actually slightly higher. So even if it's the same, it's still more beneficial to have less number of sites. And the total waterway length for all of these sites was significantly reduced by more than 10 kilometers. So we're getting the same hydropower, but with a lesser cost. So yeah, we can say that the integration with this distributed hydrological model improved the economic efficiency of this site selection algorithm. And then if we consider the dam type hydropower projects, then we need to consider their operation as well. So we use this algorithm developed in heuristic algorithm in developed by Zhang et al. So we considered both the cascaded operations and individual operation of each dam. So I mean, this is of course a kind of a dummy. It's not really physically possible, but we considered it anyway. So yeah, we can see that there's a big difference when we talk about the cascaded operation or the individual operation of each dam. So this is also really important to consider in terms of getting the more accurate estimate of power generation. Okay, yeah, it's the same. So in order to make this research more reproducible and more easier to apply to other regions, we developed a set of tools in ArcGIS. So there's a ArcPy backend to this. And then, yeah, you only need a few inputs related to topography. And if you have some inputs from the WebDHM model simulations, you can input them here. But these are not necessary. So you don't need hydrological modeling to run this. You can only use the topographic inputs as well. And then, so basically, you can just run this tool, and it takes, for this river basin, it took around three to four hours to run, and then you will get the final solution. And now, in collaboration with some international students who are from Myanmar and from Uzbekistan up in Central Asia, we're applying the applicability of, considering the applicability of this tool in this river basin. So I don't really have a background of working with the government. So these international students actually have a couple of years of experience working with hydropower companies in their country. So we are trying to expand the applicability of this tool and consider the more caveats and the downsides of this tool. So in conclusion, we developed a robust and objective hydropower site selection tool, which can model these different physical components and resolve the conflicts. Integration with the distributed hydrological model provided us more economically efficient solutions, and the development of a unique generalized cascaded hydropower network model and its integration made it possible to consider multi-reservoir operations during site selection. So the next obvious step would be to apply this kind of algorithm to a global scale, and a lot of people have already been considering that, but the global scale applicability is still really, really simple. So we just use some global data sets and multiply the discharge by the elevation to get the hydropower assessment. But by using this, the scaling of this kind of algorithm, we can get a more accurate estimate of hydropower potential. And okay, so this is the first topic. And then the second topic is about the development of a real-time snow hydrology prediction system for optimizing hydropower dam operations. So this is still a work in progress. But the main goal is the same, and there are a lot of challenges actually in this, and this is a little bit more complicated. So high elevation regions, we have very limited air temperature observations. We have very limited snow precipitation observations as well. So the getting high quality inputs is one of the biggest challenges in mountain hydrology. And then another big challenge is that while we have good hydrological models at this in these years, but the integration of the dam operations and the impact of these dams on distributed hydrological modeling is still being investigated. And that I think that area of research is generally termed as the socio-hydrology. And then, for the development of real-time systems, we require faster model runtimes to deliver timely decision support. So most of these previous studies which are used for the development of a real-time system make use of their lumped hydrological models or simple linear regressions because those are really fast, but the distributed hydrological models are quite slow and they need a lot of inputs, so this is a big challenge to get the faster model runtimes. And the reason why we need this is to get the initial condition of the snow or soil moisture hydrological conditions for reasonable prediction skill of hydrological forecast. So again, this is the same picture, and then these are the different objectives of this research put into different places. So we need to get the good quality inputs of air temperature and the snow to get the good simulation of snow melt. And then we need to integrate the hydropower system with the hydrological model. So these should be integrated into a single system that can be used to provide fast decision support for real-time prediction purposes. And here I changed the name of the hydrological model. So now we have been working for the last couple of months for the development of a new, we sort of restructured the old model, which was called WebPHMS. So now it's called WebPHM four component with snow. So we restructured the whole hydrological model. Previously it was sort of like, it had a lot of spaghetti code, if you're familiar with the term. So it was like really difficult to divide the code into different modules and sort of separate things and make sense of those. So we restructured this code and now it has four main components. So the land surface model and the vertical soil moisture scheme and the hill slope runoff model, which calculates the runoff, and then a river routing scheme, which basically calculates the river discharge, which is what we need. And then each of this component can have additional modules, so we sort of add them as layers to these different components. For example, the land surface model has now been improved with the addition of a snow model, which is what the S stands for. And the river routing scheme has been improved with the inclusion of dam operations. So this is included as a layer in this part. So I'm gonna talk about the application of this model from the point of view of real-time prediction system or snow, real-time snow prediction. And the interesting part of this model is this part on the left side, these two components are fully distributed, which means that they are run with each grid has a computation. But luckily for us, this at this moment still, this model doesn't really consider the grid. So there is no transfer of fluxes from one grid to the other one. So each grid has an independent simulation on the other one. So, but still, this is a pretty computationally expensive part. And this part over here is pseudo-distributed. So it's not like fully gridded. So there is a grouping of the grids. So that's why we call it pseudo-distributed. And it's not really computationally expensive. So we can keep this part as it is. But this fully distributed part needs to be made a lot faster. And since all the processes are independent from one grid to the other, so we introduced the parallel programming here to make the computation times really faster. So yeah, so this is a small, I'm not gonna go into the details of these, but this is the model development history of WebPHM. So this was initially developed, the development was started in 2007, and this is sort of the legacy model of our lab. And so we had like version 1 and version 2, which had these kind of different submodules. And then somewhere around 2010, the modeling started being diverted into two different directions. So this direction is more about the application of this model to real-time applications. And here, the researchers started improving the physics of these models. So this diversion is sort of problematic because we can apply this two different models for the real-time applications in the snow dominant areas. So that's why we developed this new model, which is called the WDGMS4CS, so which includes the submodules from all of these different models so that we can have a faster prediction of the hydrological conditions in snow-driven river basins. Yeah. And then we're applying this, testing this model in a river basin in Japan. It's called Kurobe River Basin. And in this river basin, you can see that these blue are the hydropower dams. So these are operated by Kansai Electric Power Company. And this red dam is operated by the Ministry of Land, Infrastructure, Transportation, and Tourism. So this red one is used for flood control, but these are the upstream dams are used for hydropower generation. And you can see that there's a pretty complicated network of these hydropower dams and the powerhouses from the first figure that I showed earlier. So this is not easily simple. So it's like pretty complicated here. So this needs to be integrated into the hydrological model. And this is a picture of Kurobe River Basin taken last year in the end of October. So you can see that there's some of the mountain tops are receiving some snowfall. And So in this river basin, like 60% of this water comes from snow. So it's really important to model the melt of this snow in real time. And as I mentioned, that we have very limited temperature observations in the high mountain areas. So what we do to extrapolate these is we do a simple linear regression between those temperature observations and elevation of those observations, and then we use this linear regression to extrapolate the air temperature in the high elevation regions. But this is not really a good way because it still requires some observation sites at very high altitude. So if we don't have these two points, then the linear regression doesn't really make any sense. So what we are doing here is we are using three-dimensional air temperature observations, or four-dimensional if you consider the time as well. So these are based on reanalysis data sets. So these four-dimensional data sets have a vertical simulation of the air temperature, and we designed this algorithm so that we can include this vertical changes in the temperature into our model to extrapolate the air temperatures in the high elevation regions. So by doing this, we can, for example, if this is the air temperature observation at a certain time in this river basin, only based on the stations, then by using this vertical temperature profile from reanalysis, we can get this more accurate corrected air temperature at the high elevation regions. And we conducted several experiments to see the differences in these different kinds of products. Yeah, there are some differences. But clearly, at the high elevation, we don't have any observation points. So the value is there for these kind of methods. And as I mentioned, the snow is also really, the snow observation is also really poor in high elevation regions. So we need a method for correcting this snowfall at the high elevation regions. Luckily, in Japan, we have a very high resolution radar product, which has a resolution of about 1 kilometer. The problem still remains that the snowfall observation is really biased in these high elevation regions. So we designed an algorithm to correct this snowfall using a hydrological model. This is the WDGMS4SC. And so we apply a correction factor to snowfall by using this radar product. And we run the model and we compare the model output with the discharge observation and the snow cover simulation with the satellite snow cover observation. We calculate the errors, we combine them into a single objective function, and then we are using this the optimization scheme called SEUA to minimize this error. So this is all that's important, is to minimize these two different errors and then find out the optimal snow correction factors. And so this is what a typical discharge simulation looks like. So with the snow correction applied. And so this is for the discharge error estimation. And this is what the typical snow cover simulation looks like. So this is the satellite sensor snow cover observation at the different times in the year. And this is our model's snow cover simulation. So there is a pretty good agreement if you look at the snow melt season, but still there are some errors that need to be minimized. And the black color here shows the overestimation of the snow snow cover, and the red color shows the underestimation of snow cover. So these need to be reduced. So these are the two errors that we need to minimize. And once we minimize these errors, obviously we already have obtained a very high resolution air temperature using the vertical temperature profile, and then simulated snow depth, compared it with the satellite. And then once we do all of this, we can get the really accurate snowfall data. So this is what the original radar data of snowfall looked like, and this is what the corrected data looks like. So you can see that there is a huge difference, maybe even up to like 4,000 millimeters for this snowfall season of 2010-2011. So this is really how we can use hydrological modeling and remote sensing data sets to correct the air temperature and snowfall. And then I'm gonna probably skip this, but yeah. So this is the different kinds of experiments we did to check what are the implications of different snowfall data sets. And there's a big difference between different temperature products that we use. So this should be carefully assessed in the next few steps. And then we included because we are working, collaborating with a lot of hydropower companies, so we are able to get really high quality data from them. So we are conducting experiments to see what is the impact of including these diversions and dam operations in our hydrological simulations. So this is the same Nash coefficient for the calibration years and validation years. So this is the most upstream dam simulation, so there's no effect of any upstream dams. But at the downstream dams, you can clearly see the difference in the improvement in the Nash coefficient once we include these dam operations and diversions. And for hydropower dam real-time operations, we, for example, in this case, so this is the water level at this dam and the hydropower release for hydropower in this dam. So the snow is snow depth is maximum somewhere in the middle of March, and we need the prediction of the snow melt in the next couple of months to make good decisions so that we can reduce this spilled water in the downstream dams. So this is the purpose why we are doing this kind of simulation. Okay, and this is if you're not familiar with what kind of terminology we deal with in the forecast based adaptive reservoir management, this slide just show that. For example, at a certain real time, we have the meteorological forecasts. We use the hydrological model to get to simulate the inflow to our dam. And then based on some optimization scheme, we calculate the release, and then we do this at each different time step. And this time is called the forecast interval, and how much into the future can we see is called the lead time. Okay, so what's really important here in the previous slide is that this process needs to be really, really fast. And our distributed hydrological model initially was really, really slow. So this is not really practical from the actual sense. So by restructuring the model and by introducing parallel computations into the gridded part, we were able to really cut down the model runtime. So the blue color is the original model, and the red color is after introducing parallel computation and then using 20 threads. So for example, for a 39-hour lead, this is the difference in time, and on 1 month lead and 3 month lead and 1 year lead. So as the time increases for the prediction, our runtime is significantly reduced. And I'm gonna skip this slide. So this is the final picture of the real-time prediction system framework. So we need a faster model, but we also need real-time observations and real-time forecasts. So for that, we are using a data integration and analysis system in Japan. So it's it's one of the biggest archiving systems in I think throughout the world. And so this archives all of the data in real time, and it also provides an environment for additional modeling. So this is the archiving system, and we have, for example, data from radars, reanalysis, forecasts. So all of this is updated in real time into this system. and then we pre-process it using a Python API, and we feed this all of this different kinds of data into our real-time model, and we get the initial condition of our model, and we predict and do all of this in a cycle and provide real-time decision support to our dam operators. So the main point is that we can get the real-time river discharge and real-time snow depth and real-time prediction of river discharge and snow depth. So this is what our hydropower dam operations are based on. And now, with the collaboration of University of Tokyo with Nippon Koei and ICHARM, which is the International Center for Hazard and Assessment and Risk Management, we are applying this, extending this system to different rivers which are dependent upon snow in and have hydropower dams in Japan. Okay, and so this is the conclusion for this part. So we saw that the combined correction of air temperature and snow correction improves and provides a more comprehensive experimental environment for evaluating the lapse rates of air temperature. And the inclusion of hydropower dam networks in operation significantly improved the discharge simulations in this model. And then we restructured this model so that we can significantly run reduce the runtimes for this model. Yeah. So this is the last slide. So thank you very much for your time. If you have any questions.
So yeah, we do have time for questions. Yeah, let's start with Wendy. Wendy, and then we'll go over here to. Sure.
Sorry, I need to leave for one, so thanks. In your first part of the model, I see that you have an input that is to exclude some protected areas,
mm-hmm.
right? But do you also, in a scaled way, assess the environmental impact of your different options?
The environmental impact of these developments.
Right, when you choose different routes,
mm-hmm.
right, or different plans,
mm-hmm.
Other than the cost
mm-hmm.
that's different,
mm-hmm.
is there an environmental cost as well in your model?
Yeah, so what these kind of structures do is they divert the water here, directly here, so which means that we don't have a lot of water for the biological life in this region. So what we do is for each of these sites identified, we consider an environmental release of water from each of these dams. So it's a certain percentage of the last 20 years minimum discharge. So we use that to preserve biological life. So if the hydropower site cannot provide that minimum level of discharge, it is not considered in the site selection effort. So we exclude that based on. So that's the only environmental constraint at this moment in this scheme. Yeah.
I'd also follow Wendy's question. Actually, so how you determine the initial location for your? I notice you have when you have a buffer, there's a lot of location, right? So how you determine the initial location?
This one.
Yes.
So we don't. We consider all the locations. So this is just one iteration of this scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So in the next iteration, next point is going to be here, and the next iteration is going to be here, and here, and here, and here. So we consider all possibilities of these initial location.
Oh, okay. So that means you create a whole site.
Yeah, yeah. So once we consider all possible locations, we get this.
Okay.
And then we try to resolve it further to this.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
So related to his question,
mm-hmm.
What is that? Do you have any spatial resolution?
Yeah. So it depends on how much computation time you want to handle. So in this case, as far as I remember, it's like 500 meters is along this stream is the resolution where we assess different sites. Yeah, we can have depending upon that, because the DEM resolution is like 30 meters, so we can have a smaller segment, but that would really increase the computation time,
yeah.
because it's based on ArcPy, and ArcPy really takes up a lot of time for computation.
Yeah. So related to this question,
mm-hmm.
so in the beginning you said the distributed hydrological model
mm-hmm.
is computationally expensive
mm-hmm.
and data intensive,
mm-hmm.
but it increased the economic efficiency
mm-hmm.
in the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So how much, so what is the net benefit,
mm-hmm.
you know, so what is the, how to say, optimal size
mm-hmm.
of distributed hydrological model
mm-hmm.
considering these computational cost and data cost?
Okay, so as I mentioned, that this discretization is like 500 meters, and the hydrological model that we used was 300 meter resolution, just so that we can have a resolution finer than the discretization. So actually, for the hydrological model runtime, it's not really important in the planning phase because we need to run it just only once. So it would take probably less than a day to run the hydrological model, and then we can use 20-year simulation for our analysis. So that's really important. The runtimes are really important for real-time applications, which is when we don't have enough time to make the decision. And as far as data is concerned, as I mentioned, we don't have data at high resolution, at high elevation areas, and we need the precipitation data and air temperature data. So in this river basin, we only had 2 points where we had data. But with the new correction methods that I've introduced, we can easily scale these methods up to high elevation areas even if the data is limited. So that's like what we're trying to solve. So obviously, yeah, there is some need for data. Some data is needed. We can't have, you know, we need at least one discharge observation to validate our model. But with the new data sets like the global observations of the surface water, probably in the future we will have a much better discharge observation, so we can even have discharge observation in high elevation areas in the stations.
So one more question.
Mm-hmm.
So you integrate your model with the GIS.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, how you know these two components integrated? So the model is and the GIS is a separate system, or the model directly developed in GIS?
Okay, so this you mean this one?
Yes, yes.
So this so there are two parts. So we keep the hydrological model separate.
Okay.
From the site selection algorithm.
Okay.
So the site selection algorithm is completely built into ArcGIS.
So the model is separate?
Yeah, the hydrological model is separate.
Okay.
But the site selection tool is entirely in ArcGIS.
In GIS.
Yeah, using
okay.
ArcPy and Python, like Pandas or XRU. So we use those kind of modules
yeah.
in Python to make this tool set, but we keep the hydrological model separate, and then we use the So this is the path to WebDHM simulation output. So you just need to provide the path to that model's
okay.
Output directory so that it can read up all of the inputs from the model. So so we don't want this tool's application to be limited just to this hydrological model. So in the future,
mm-hmm.
we want to use it with the different kinds of hydrological models to see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, formally. So actually, we are trying to integrate, you know, this kind of model to GIS,
mm-hmm.
but it's not easy to, you know, totally develop a kind of, you know, it's very like distributed models in the system. So,
yeah. So actually, we also had a lot of problems. So for input processing of this WebDHM model,
mm-hmm.
we need to process a lot of inputs to space-time interpolations and then converted it to the appropriate format to run this model. And then we were working on developing a Python toolset, ArcGIS toolset for preparing inputs for this model. And we also had a lot of trouble with it.
Mm.
So, but now I think, I think Python is improving a lot over the recent years.
Right.
So it's, to some degree, it's possible, but running the model entirely in ArcGIS, you know,
yeah.
it's a little bit difficult.
Have you explored doing it in ArcGIS Pro or
GIS
Server?
This is the generic ArcGIS desktop.
So it's just desktop?
Yeah. I don't think RTS Pro has all of the tools that I need.
That would be my suspicion.
Mm.
But it is 64-bit architecture versus
your 32.
Desktop, which is 32.
Yeah,
and,
actually.
You know, from we found just from using ArcGIS Pro recently, you know, it handles large computation much, much better.
Oh, really?
Yeah, freezes less, you know, crashes less.
Mm-hmm. So actually,
but it only contains, I don't know, you
yeah,
know, something like half of the, I think there's
sets.
Over 1,100 analytical tools in ArcGIS Desktop, and then in Pro is something like
yeah.
300 to 500, you know.
Yeah, so actually I tried to move this on to ArcGIS Pro.
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned, the tool set is limited, so we can't really do everything over there. But another interesting point is, as you mentioned, the 32-bit versus the 64-bit architecture. So I think in ArcGIS Desktop, there is an additional add-on that you can use to run everything in 64-bit. So I'm using that now.
Okay.
So, but it didn't
okay.
really improve a lot. It's just a little bit maybe.
And is it something ArcGIS Server that you could run through ArcGIS Server, or is it again the functionality?
We haven't tried because I don't think we have a license for ArcGIS.
We have
yes. license for ArcGIS Server.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't tried that yet.
Okay.
Mm. So that may be considered in the future.
Yeah.
So ArcGIS Pro is faster than the
than ArcMap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And especially with rendering large data sets.
Okay.
You know, for example, you have 500,000 points, and in ArcGIS Pro, you can zoom in and zoom out, and
mm-hmm.
no performance issues at all. In
mm-hmm.
ArcMap, you know, might take a minute or two to draw something
okay.
like that, and then other large processing, you know, like doing distance calculations or
uh-huh.
overlay analysis, where ArcMap will, you know, you get a large enough data set, and ArcMap will crash.
Mm-hmm.
ArcGIS Pro seems to handle the RAM a lot better, and so it doesn't have the memory leaks and
mm.
with the 64-bit process. And that was one of Esri's biggest reasons to move to 64-bit, just so it would be better at processing big data and not be so.
Both are based on desktop or, right?
Desktop, yeah. So
desktop, okay.
Just all desktop.
Okay.
Mm.
And,
yeah,
you know, we...
Yeah, so debugging this in ArcGIS Desktop was quite a bit of an issue.
Oh, I can imagine.
So you can
yeah.
imagine. So actually, so there's another alternative developer's version for this tool, which is entirely based on Python.
I see.
So you don't need to have the interface running up. So I used that for debugging this whole thing.
Gotcha. So you can, and that is probably more efficient, just
yeah,
running
yeah,
it straight
definitely.
Through
it doesn't
Python.
Crash
Python.
Mm.
Yeah. So a question on your... the first part of your analysis, the optimization of hydropower in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
How do you factor in for population, right? Because you can generate more hydropower, but then if it's 500 kilometers from the nearest population
mm-hmm.
center, does that come into factor at all, or is just simply, you know, transporting that energy in incremental cost, no matter if it's 10 kilometers away or 500 kilometers away? How does that kind of
yeah, so that is really important. And at this moment, it's we are just assuming that this is all connected to the national grid. So we don't consider that it is providing to remote users.
Right.
And I think there's a data set called WorldPop, which is like, I think,
100 meter resolution. 100
meter resolution.
Yeah.
So that is being used for the assessment of reservoir impacts on the population,
okay.
but it's not demand driven. So
right.
that could be the next step as well for this kind of scheme.
Right, it seems like, and it seems like pretty scalable to take that one relatively small drainage
mm.
that you developed it on and scale across the country, or what would be the challenges to
So the challenges are, I think, more of a hydrological nature. So as for hydrological modeling, generally speaking, we have a single outlet point, which is in this case this point, for example, and then the algorithm takes up this point and runs all the way to the top of the river basin. In the case of global applications, we have a lot of outlet points. There are a lot of rivers going directly into the ocean. So that is a bigger problem from the point of view of this algorithm and also from hydrological modeling applications. So that's just a structuring issue. But we have global hydrological models which do take this factor into consideration. So sort of restructuring this tool set to those, you know, global hydrological modeling frameworks could help resolve this issue.
So this would really be able to be scaled to similar basins with with one upflow and relatively self-contained.
Yeah, usually in the regional studies and for high mountain areas, we only have one outlet point.
Yeah.
But as these go closer to the ocean, we might have more than one outlet point.
Distributaries spread out across.
Yeah.
Right.
So the assumption is that this is high elevation area, so that's maybe not important but for global applications, we need to consider.
Actually, I'm not familiar with size selection of dam, but your model considering power generation potential, but also are you also considering flood management functionality of dam?
So these four dams are basically their primary purpose is hydropower generation. At this moment, they don't really consider, they don't give a lot of importance to flood. Actually, in this river basin, there isn't really a lot of flood, but if there is, they don't really give importance to flood. But this red one over here, they give importance to flood as well.
Okay.
The challenge, again, is to use prediction data to provide that kind of decision support as well. So if we develop this whole system, as I showed in the last slide, so then not only can we design the optimization for hydropower, but we can also sort of factor in some flood-related impacts as well. So we can sort of try to minimize those. So a lot of prediction study is usually for flood management.
Mm-hmm.
So not a lot of people focus on hydropower a lot. So the combining those two would be definitely it's a challenge and it's still an ongoing research.
Any more questions? Yes.
I have a question about the real-time prediction system of the second piece.
Okay.
And we know that it takes a certain time to compute the data from the satellite or from the observation data.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how long it can predict. For 1 month or 1 year, and what's the efficiency of the real-time system?
Okay. This figure shows basically two chunks of processes. So this is the regridding and formatting of all of this data set. So I think this is what you're talking about. How long is the computation or the processing for this for these different data sets? And then once these data sets are prepared, these are used for real-time prediction. So there's the major bottlenecks are these, this one, and then this one. So for this one, I already mentioned that we are using parallel programming to run to cut down the computation times. And now it just takes a couple of seconds to do a two-day simulation. So just
two-day
in
simulation.
Yeah. So in like I think So for example, 39-hour simulation. Takes 1 second, so this is like really short. So for 3 months, if we have 3 month forecast, then this would take only 50 seconds to process. And of course we can scale it up. I mean, if we need faster times, we can just increase the number of threads, and that would easily reduce the time. So that issue is resolved through this parallel computation, and then you mentioned. Maybe I have an additional slide here. So we are pre-processing different kinds of data sets. So for example, this data set is updated at every hour and every day and every 6 hours. So we are also using parallel processing for pre-processing all of these data sets as well. So we make sure that those pre-processing times don't match with the real-time model runtimes so that we can maximize the use of our virtual machine. So for example, this takes only 7 seconds every hour to pre-process, and then 20 seconds every day, and 15 minutes every 6 hours. So we make sure that these timings don't match up so that it doesn't all crash into the same time. So by doing that, we can make sure that our computation time is limited.
That's great. So it's an online system or a local desktop system?
It's an online system. So we are using this data integration and analysis system. So this provides an online virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, it's called a Kurobe virtual machine with 5 threads. So we are using this to put this whole, we've already put this whole system online. So it's running now, and I can access it on my PC, but it's running back in Japan.
Okay, so it's not open to the public, right?
No, I think it's open to the public, but maybe, I don't know, in the future, maybe we have something on the website to show for this. Yeah, but it's, at this moment, it's not.
Do you mean the processing platform, open to the public?
I mean,
oh, their system, okay.
We want to do, conduct some experiment with this system. So, and another question, one more question,
mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
One more question. Do you have to add some parameters that considering about the environment change or climate change when you simulated this process? Because as the time going, there are some conditions changed, and we have to address the parameters of the models in time. So do you have to
change the parameters,
yeah,
considering, for example, climate change or something?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's in the initial slides I mentioned that we have like two kinds of models based on empirical processes or physical processes. So the empirical processes are based on some previous set of experiments, and we get a relationship, and then we do prediction. But the physical processes are based on physics. So the physics never changes, even in the future.
Okay.
So inputs can change, but the physics remains the same. But if you use empirical equations based on historical experiments, those would not be valid in the future. In that case, you need to change the parameters. So this is the really the importance of having physical processes involved in hydrological modeling. So we don't need to change any parameters in the future. If the system remains the same, we don't need to change any parameters.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that was excellent. Thank you very much again.
Thank you.